hear the room's pitch dark. I wonder where you are tonight. No answer on the telephone. And the night goes by so very slow.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 28. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week? Well, fuck. We were supposed to talk about two new comics from January 29th, 2014, but then Aaron got pneumonia and ruined everything. So I'm not exactly sure what to tell you about the rest of the show. At the very least, on the couch this week, we talked with Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, writers of the upcoming original graphic novel Downset Fight, published by Oni Press. And as always, we do have your nerd confessions. Just as a reminder, we don't do reviews, but we do talk a lot. At least, I do. So there may be spoilers from here on out. Or there may not be. I'm kinda talking to myself here.
Your Comics Therapy, episode 28, the first time for Spider Breath, so it's gonna be great. I live pretty high, but sometimes I feel low, so instead of sipping gin, yeah, I'll tell you where I go. I bust out my place to hit up my local comic shop. They got all the shit just to keep me sitting up on the top. Pick up Spider-Man and I'm a force that you cannot stop.
Take a look at me now, I'm in a better place. A better place. You take a look at me now. I bought my comics today. Comics today.
Think about it. That's something bad as powers. Yeah, that shit just wrote me in. Maybe it's the fact that Peter Parker was just a kid. You can argue better comics, I just don't give a fuck. Cause when I'm feeling down, at least it ain't Parker luck. In my opinion, it's everything a comic should be. Think of all the villains and the underdog, shall we? Every issue make you feel good, don't you agree?
Take a look at me now, I'm in a better place. A better place. You take a look at me now, I bought my comics today, comics today.
Now can't you see? Now let's get personal, cause this is comics therapy. I spent last summer studying up in Germany. Had all the beers and Jaeger Spider-Brad could drink, but when I was feeling homesick, I had nothing to read. To my surprise, saw a comic shop one night. Picked up Amazing Spider-Man, I felt alright. If I got comics in my hand, then I am living life.
So, welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. In fact, with Aaron currently offline dying from the plague, he doesn't have much to say at all. Luckily, the theme of the show this week was already scheduled as being alone. Sure, you can call it solitude. You can get all introspective about it. You can even claim you like it. But at the end of the day, you're alone, man. How does that really make you feel? Huh. Turns out that was funnier when we were talking about comics.
Hi, guys. Jason Sachs here at Jason Sachs on the Twitter. You know, one thing a lot of people don't know about me, among my friends, is that I do get very down sometimes. It's strange, kind of hard to explain, but just the mood hits me, and it's hard for me to pull out from this kind of bizarre funk that I seem to be dwelling in every now and then. Thankfully not at the moment. There's certain things that always just make me happy. Certain things are just pure and right and always good. One of which is when I pull out a classic old George Perez or an Avengers comic, there's just something beautiful and clean and special about the way that Perez drew the Beast and Hellcat and Jocasta and all those crazy outfits that Wonder Man wore during his era when Perez was drawing the comic. There's just pure joy in reading those books. It just makes me smile every time. And now I have to tell you the most funny part about this call. First of all, that it's a great topic and it's fun to think about. But the other day I was chatting with my pal Keith Silva, and Keith steps me and says, or not Skypes me, he tweets me and says, "Hey, Jason, I know what you really love. That's some George Perez comics. You know who knows me? It's that Keith Silva guy." Thanks, guys. Thanks, Keith. It's been fun. Catch you later. Bye.
In between segments, your very own Nerd Confessions, celebrating the geeky things we all do, say, read, and enjoy. This week's prompt asked listeners to share the comics they turn to when life bottoms out, the stories and characters they read to cheer up during the worst of times, like when your co-host has leprosy and can't record. You can call, Skype, or email your confessions. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. We're posting the weekly theme on the site, on Twitter, and on Facebook for your convenience, and the rest is up to you.
Hello, fellow unpaid comics therapy confessors. I'm Keith Silva. In these difficult times of slut-shaming, calling out listeners, wink, wink, and constant airplay of Bad Company and songs like The Final Countdown on certain podcasts, Europe. It's good to know that I can find a port in the storm, a book to brighten my spirits while I craft passive-aggressive, witty reposts like this one. The book I'm madly in love with right now is Delusional by Pharrell Dalrymple. Pick a novel you've read, maybe even reread. If you can open it up at any random page and fall right back in that story, know exactly where you are and what's going on, that's the magic of storytelling. That's love. And even though I've only read it once, that's the feeling I get from Dalrymple's book. Delusional is subtitled The Graphic and Sequential Work of Pharrell Dalrymple. So it's not one long-ass narrative. It's strips, one or two pages, and illustrations. But even in a single panel, the world around me falls away. Dalrymple makes me stop, focus, and think, and think, and think. This is a beautiful book, from its embossed cover to its end papers, yes, end papers, and the overall arrangement of the stories and drawings. Dalrymple is a master cartoonist, and perhaps a genius. So when times are tough and old man Sachs is wondering, what are you writing next? And after that, and after that, and after that? Let me put in a plug here and just say the review Dan Elkin and I wrote on Comics Bulletin about Eel Mansions 2 is the cat's ass, and you should read it right now. That said, it's good to know that I have a book to lift my spirits and a way to become delusional.
Between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Andrea Schock and Aaron at Aaron Myers. And of course, the show account at Comics Therapy. Except not really, since Aaron manages that account too, and I may have mentioned that he's succumbed to scurvy. Gotta eat more citrus, Myers. So yeah. Can't stress enough how convenient it is that the theme this week was already set. Being alone. Yep. All by myself. Yeah. This is going to go fast, isn't it?
Hey, guys. This is James Kaplan at SinisterJHK on Twitter. And as soon as I saw this week's Nerd Confession question, what comics do you read to brighten your spirits when you're down? The answer came to me instantly. And the answer for me is All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison, art by Frank Quitely. This is possibly my all-time favorite comic, and one that I go back to again and again if I'm feeling down or stressed out, as I am this week. The issues, the story, the art, all of it is just full of optimism and wit and humor. And, you know, issue 10 by itself is full of so many moments when Superman talks to the girl who's thinking about killing herself, or he brings the Kandorians that can't help him to help the cancer patients. There's so many emotional moments, so many emotionally honest moments. Superman believes in humanity. He believes in the best in people and inspires people to be better. And it's, yeah, it's just pretty much everything that's great about comics. And so that's why it's where I would go back to again and again when I'm feeling down. Love the show. Thanks very much.
Oh, let's do Andrea's Inner Child, shall we? Except no timer bullshit. Should have thought about that before you died from consumption, Aaron. It's my show now. I can do whatever I want. So let's talk about Runaways. I love this book. I've been rereading it on and off for the past month, and I think it's an apt answer to the nerd confession prompt this week also. I actually don't read a lot of comics when I'm down. I have a harder time focusing on the medium when my mind is racing 100 miles a minute, and since I'm constantly balancing anxiety with a side order of depression anyway, I usually pick something I know really well to try to tune out for a bit. Often that's watching The West Wing, but you all knew that. Wow, it's so refreshing to be able to talk about this without Myers interrupting me. I should have slipped in that anthrax months ago. Anyway, Runaways is an exception for a couple of reasons. I do know it really well, so that helps. But I think from a characterization standpoint, it's just really fucking approachable. Any teenager can relate to the feelings of inadequacy and awkwardness that the young heroes in Runaways experience at the beginning, and really throughout their entire time together. And any adult, being honest with themselves, can remember those cringeworthy moments of adolescence that are still all too raw to always be ha-ha funny. It's poignant without being pithy, and damn, that's a fine line to walk. It's also often really irreverently funny, poking at the Marvel Universe with affection like a bemused big brother. So I've been rereading it because it puts me in a great mood, even when it's sad, which is probably the point. Okay, well, that was fun. Bit of soul-bearing for you all before we get to the good stuff. I assume things will be back to normal next week, by the way. I'll have a new co-host. Oh, did I mention that Aaron has died from cholera? Who knew that was a real thing? I always thought they made it up for Oregon Trail. So yeah, I'll be holding auditions for a new co-host sometime soon. I'm thinking the qualifications are tall, dark and handsome, brooding, probably has read a comic at least once in his life. So if you know anybody like that, give him my number, okay?
One Soul by Ray Fox. Because, first of all, who he dedicates the book to touches home, and it instantly reminds me of the fragility of, well, everything. It's one of those books that helps you transcend the beating life can give you. Like, after reading it, at least I was, left with a better perspective, a better outlook. Such a fantastic book. I love comics like this! Kyle.
Really, the only other thing I wanted to talk about before giving you all what you came for, a great interview with writers Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, is maybe this idea of internet personas versus real-life people. It comes up a bit in the interview, actually, since you may recognize Chris from the Twitters, and both he and Chad write about comics as well as make them. Chris especially has a very well-known online personality, and I always think that's interesting to take a peek behind, as it were, since so often online interactions aren't anywhere close to the complete picture. I love Twitter, you guys, but I think we can all agree that sometimes the cultivated personas we hide behind might not be a fair representation of who we are in real life. The most basic example, guys say stuff to girls online they would never say in person. And you know what? The reverse is hella true, too. On the other hand, some of my very best friends in the universe I met online, and the feelings those interactions bring are absolutely true and honest and good. So what does this mean in the long run? I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. The internet is a weird place, but we can always make it better for each other. Right now, I think it's wise to remember Will Wheaton's creed and just don't be a dick. Online, offline, whatever. Be excellent to each other. That works too. Because when you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. Go ahead. I'll wait while you sing the rest of that verse to yourself. What I really mean is, if comics can't brighten your spirits when you're low, find some people who can. Be yourself. No compromises. And yes, I was kidding about Typhoid Myers. The reports of his demise are greatly exaggerated. For comedy, I'm great at jokes. He'll be back next week. Wish him a speedy recovery so he can take his lovely wife, Chrissy, someplace awesome for her birthday. On to the interview.
Hey, it's David again. Twitter handle Maryland of Oz. The comic that I read to brighten my spirits when I'm down, out of all of them, I would have to go with one of my all-time favorites, All-Star Superman. The reason why I love it so much for when I'm down is it has such bright, vibrant color. Despite what Superman is going through, he maintains his cheerful disposition. It's the perfect distillation of Superman. But most of all, that one page where Superman confronts Regan, the suicidal girl, and he tells her, "You are stronger than you think you are. Trust me." I think that page, besides being one of the greatest ever written and drawn, is the perfect Superman quote. Inspiring and perfect in the read when you're feeling depressed. So that's my nerd confession. Thank you for listening.
This week on The Couch, we welcome guests Chad Bowers and Chris Sims. You might know Chad and Chris from their previous work together on books like Subatomic Party Girls, published through Monkey Brain, or Awesome Hospital, or separately for Chris's work as a writer on Comics Alliance and co-host of War Rocket Ajax podcast, and Chad for his hosting of Multiversity's The Hour Cosmic podcast or his webcomic Monsters Plus. There's a lot more we could list, but just Google it for the love of God. Most importantly, their new book, Downset Fight, is available currently in chapters digitally on Comixology or out in print from Oni Press on February 12th. Diamond order code OCT131259. Welcome to the show, guys.
That was good. You must have gotten one of the flyers that we were giving out yesterday.
No, I just like to be prepared.
That's a lot of stuff, dude. Is there any other, I don't know, other current projects that you want to let us in on or work that our listeners should be aware of that Aaron didn't just bombard us with? Chris, let's start with you.
Dracula the Unconquered, the first two issues are still available.
Yes. Okay.
The calendar year of 2013 went by without a new one.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that. I loved the first two.
Oh, were you disappointed?
Yes.
Steve Downer is I am really, really glad that people are recognizing Steve's talent because he is just slammed up busy doing coloring work for books like Edison Rex and freelance stuff. He's done stuff for Archie. So that's, you know, the things that pay him more money than our small press digital only webcomic that requires a ton of work are keeping him busy. But the first two issues are still available, and number four has been written. So he's working on three now, and hopefully that and four will be out sometime this year. Cool. I think Chad and I both have secret unannounced projects that we're working on.
That's fine. You can either taunt us with them or you can just leave it at that.
But I guess the other thing that's available now is that Matt Wilson and I, who is the co-host of War Rocket Ajax, we also do a premium podcast called Movie Fighters, which is sort of an extension of the comedy movie reviews that we used to do on Comics Alliance.
Yes.
So,
and those are on SoundCloud?
Those are on Bandcamp.
On Bandcamp. Okay.
Moviefighters.bandcamp.com. And right now we're doing a series on movies that are live-action adaptations of anime.
Mm-hmm.
So we just did Dragon Ball Evolution, a movie that made no sense.
Right.
That had Spike from Buffy as Piccolo, and I will bet money he was on set for one day. Chad, what about you?
I mean, I got a lot coming up too. I have some. I'll be reading Larry Hama's Wolfpack.
That's good.
Coming up, I'm gonna be watching some TV.
Okay. Awesome. Anything in particular? Are you just gonna do channel surfing?
No, channel surfing really. And then I've got some a sweet guacamole recipe. I'm gonna probably work on.
Will nice. That be published
don't
online,
forget.
Or is that a premium download purchase?
Oh, that's a premium.
Don't forget the cilantro, dude. If you don't put the cilantro right. in it, we can't be friends.
That's a premium. That's good. That's good advice.
That's a money
always
maker.
Cilantro. No, I mean, I got a couple of things that I'm working on. My projects aren't quite where I want to talk about them. JoJo Seams, who I did Monster Plus with, she and I are working on something new, but I am pretty slack on my end as far as getting her some stuff to work on. She's anxious to do it. We've got some pretty good stuff lined up and a pretty good plan, but it's just a matter of trying to get through, you know, Downset Fight's keeping us pretty busy with the promo side of things. And Chris and I actually have another book that we're looking at trying to put out sometime in 2014 with Matt Diggs that we did Awesome Hospital with, and that's kind of something we're working on. And then there's two or three other little pitches that I'm working on that are in various stages. But yeah, there's going to be more stuff in 2014. It's just not a lot of stuff that I can talk about right now.
No, it's early in the year.
Those two or three pitches are what Chad has come up with today.
Just because you were going to talk to us and we knew you knew we'd ask, so you had to hurry up and come up with something.
Absolutely, yeah. I always try to come up with two pitches per podcast. So
that's good.
You don't have to tell us what they are. Just the fact that you used the word pitch is enough that people are going to go, oh, man.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when you go to cons and stuff and people ask you what you're working on, like, if Steve's still drawing Dracula the Unconquered and Matt's working on the project we're doing with him, and Erica's working on the next issue of Subatomic Party Girls. You just tell people, well, I've got some pitches.
I've
got some pitches I'm looking to get in.
Got a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of things brewing. Expect big things. You got to keep in generalities.
I did have a really good conversation with Erica today about Subatomic Party Girls number 5, which is coming up. So,
okay,
cool. I would love to tell you guys what that's about, but I'm gonna hold off and tease that.
That's fine.
We totally accept taunting. It's cool.
Well, yeah. Could we talk about something that is done? Can we talk about Downset Fight for a little bit?
Sure, show.
Okay.
Awesome.
Great. We're off to a good start.
Chad, are you wearing sunglasses right now?
Well, first I want to say I was genuinely blown away by how much I love this. And that's going to sound weirdly maybe backhanded, but it's not at all.
You're pandering, dude.
No, well, it's not pandering if it's real. And okay. And I expected a fun book from you guys, but this was a fantastic read. It really kept me entertained. And I've been thinking about it a lot after I finished it, too. So I don't want to give any spoilers, but I don't think this is really a spoiler, that ultimately... This book is about the relationship of a son and a father, coming to terms with your parents' shortcomings and learning to be your own person, kind of separate from those who raised you. Or maybe I'm projecting.
No,
that's
good. No, I was going to say I'm happy to hear you say that, because most people lead with the mascot stuff, which is fine. Like that's the easiest part of this book to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good that, you know, part of me is like, thank God, you know, somebody's at least kind of getting the. There's some substance there. There's a little more than just the mascot fight. So I'm glad to hear you say that. That means a lot.
In all fairness, we did not pitch it as we did not go into Charlie Chu's office and be like, hey, man, we want to tell this really emotional father and son story. We didn't tell him, hey, we want to do a book where a guy beats up a bunch of mascots.
Well, I mean, that's the fun part. That's the A story. But the B story is really the weight of the book, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's the thing that that we always talk about with comics and that I talk about in reviews. It's that anybody can really write a fight scene. Like, I really love writing fight scenes. We just did an interview the other day where I talked about how that's my favorite part of doing the actual scripting is, and the most detail that I get into is laying out fight scenes in my head, which is weird because that's the thing where the artist, you know, ideally should take over. But I think it's just really fun to sort of stage things out.
Do you lay it out visually in the script? Like, do you think about it in terms of panels, or do you think about it in terms of like the flow of action more? I mean, what do you mean?
I enjoy like connecting actions. Like there's the fight that's in chapter three that just came out on Comixology. Mm-hmm. I think Chad wrote it. It was so long ago that we finished it that it's hard to break it down to who wrote what, especially because we go back and we rewrite each other's stuff and tweak each other's panels. But Chad, I think, wrote everything from like the start of that chapter and Barkley coming into the bar and then up to the point where they start fighting. I think that was almost all Chad.
Okay.
And then like when they, you know, when Chuck tackles Barkley into the kitchen and then they have the big back and forth and they're fighting with pots and pans and bags of salt. I'm pretty sure that was mostly my stuff. I know Chad wrote a lot of the dialogue in that, but a lot of the action I think was me just cause, and that's the one I always go to cause it's the fight that I try to make things make sense and give it a sense of space. And obviously the real work in that is done by Scott.
Uh-huh. Right. He has to interpret it and make it feel real.
Yeah, but I'm like, okay, so he's got Chuck from behind, so Chuck puts his feet on the wall and slams him into the shelf, and when he's against the shelf, that's when he grabs the salt, and, you know.
Okay, so you're giving some really specific, like, physical, like, actor descriptions, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, I mean, most panels will just, and I think Chad has gotten this way, too, in the scripts he writes, you know, with Erica especially, we go back and forth in Party Girls, and it's just the, like, mostly really vague descriptions. Like, all the visual stuff in Party Girls is completely Erica's. The design on the spaceships, the design for the aliens, the way the girls look, like, that's all Erica. So, you know, all of our... There's a page in Party Girls number 3 that we literally just wrote, okay, it's a chase scene and a maze, you figure it out. And she did, and it looks amazing. She figured it out in a beautiful way. But
we lean on her pretty hard on that book, and I think a lot of that comes from sort of like getting to the main fight scene, like the biggest fight scene in Downset Fight. I think we kind of learned to let the artist kind of do their own thing sometimes, because we did choreograph a lot of the fight scenes in Downset Fight. But I do think towards the end of it, we were much more comfortable with Scott kind of doing his thing once we realized, after we'd seen like 2 or 3 fights.
Sure.
So were you actively writing the script and sending him the chapters, and then he was sending back pages, and then you could kind of adapt your writing style as you grew that, or?
No, I mean, I think Scott got full script, didn't he, Chris? Didn't we have most of it finished when Scott got it?
They usually, with stuff, when we work with Matt, and sometimes even when we work with Erica, we'll do like a couple pages at a time and send it in, and then make sure it all works together once it's all done. But because we were working with Oni, and because this was our first big graphic novel, they had us do the entire 144 pages before Scott started drawing it. But, you know, we were, all that time we were writing it, we were talking to Scott, and we were looking at stuff that Scott had drawn, and we were reading, you know, he did the Intrepids at Image, and we were like, you know, by the time we got to the big last fight scene, we were like, yeah, he's fine. Like, I'm going to write, you know, I'm going to tell him what kind of suplex to do in this page, and he'll figure it out. He's good. But yeah, like, I really like writing those fight scenes, and I think fight scenes are fun to write. And I love reading, you know, what Warren Ellis calls them, fight comics. Like, those are all really fun. But at the same time, like, as a reader, if you don't care about what's going on, then a pretty fight scene isn't going to carry you through the book. Like, there's a lot of books that have, you know, gorgeous fight scenes drawn by great artists, but you know, there's no point to them. It's just superhero punch-ups.
Right. I mean, the best monthly issues are, you know, it culminates in a gigantic battle, but there's build up to it. You know, you have to be invested in the story in order for that epic, you know, everyone's, you know, flying through space, fighting each other, et cetera, et cetera. Like, on its own, it means nothing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why, and this, I believe, was Chad's idea, that when you see Chuck as an adult, like, the first time that a mascot shows up to fight grown-up Chuck, you know, old football coach Chuck,
yeah,
it's because he hits a kid. And, like, and so you immediately have this kind of connection to Chuck where it's like, okay, that's what's going to make him fight now.
Right.
Whereas he's very, like, the chapter one, you know, the flashback chapter, he's very, it's very much for selfish reasons that he does all the violence, all the large amount of violence. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that the father and son stuff came through, because we really did want to anchor it in a story people would care about.
Well, to go back to that, so I kind of have a question for Chad first. So, you know, as a father, was that the telling of that relationship between the son and the father, is that something close to you? Was there something about this story that while you were writing it, you had personal ties to?
That's a good question. Sort of. I mean, my son was born in 2009, and Chris and I were working on Downset Fight, what, through 2010 and 2011, I guess, Chris?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess most of 2011. So I guess the core of Downset Fight started out as something else different. A story that sort of was always about a guy and this, like, authority figure. Sometimes in the story that I had before, it was his dad. Sometimes it was, the Mad Thinker from Marvel Comics. Sometimes it was, you know, just different characters, depending on what version of the story that I was trying to play around with.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something, especially in that Al chapter where it's all about Al and the scene where he's got his kid and he's looking at his kid and the TV's there and he's trying to put together, like, what will my son be? You know, those thoughts, specifically that Al chapter, was a chapter where I felt like being a dad helped me write that. And that makes me sound like an ass because I'm, you know, like, oh, it's because you're like Al. No, it's not because I'm like Al. You know, I don't make my child run, obstacle courses of, you know, tiki huts and things like that. Like, you know, he's, Yeah, but at the same time, it certainly does play into it. The aspirations for your son and how sometimes that can kind of take over and different things like that. So there's some of that in there. Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same position. My oldest is 3.5 now, and my youngest is 8 months. And the reason this really kind of hits so hard for me is because it's that same sort of thing. When you have kids, you start wanting, I think for me, the first instinct was to start projecting your own kind of like what you wished, you know, life would turn out for you to be. It's like, how am I going to make this work for them? And it takes a lot of effort not to project that onto kids. And I think that's what this story is a lot about, of using that selfishness, you know, that sort of instinctual selfishness, and making your kids become what, you know, what you either want it to be or what you want them to be. And it's hard to let them be individuals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know you very well yet, obviously, but I mean, you seem like a nice guy, and you know, I like to consider myself a nice guy. Al's a very broken human being,
right?
You know what I mean? Like going into it, he's a very, very messed up guy. So, you know, having a kid obviously is not the best thing to ever happen to him,
right?
And for a lot of different reasons, and certainly not the best thing to ever happen to Chuck. But there's a lot of little undertones there. You know, Chuck comes from a mixed race family, which we don't really touch on in the story, but I feel like it sort of brings its own context with it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of little things that are in there. You know, Chuck comes from a mixed race family, which we never talk about it, but you know, they're in Atlanta in that story. And you know, that means a lot, you know, some 30 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And little things that kind of go into the development of the characters that we kind of let the art do, that I was really kind of proud of. That don't necessarily come from me, but come from the idea of, you know, what was this Al character like? What would he be like as a father? And how can I not be like that as a father? Those kind of things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Al and Gina, like going back and reading it, there was a lot of stuff that I'd forgotten about. Cause you know, I didn't want to go back and read the script every time we got a new page from Scott. You know, I wanted it to feel fresh when we finally got it. So when I finally, sat down and read it all, like Al and Gina were really interesting to me, and I realized, like, man, like there's a lot there we definitely, like, that's going on that we never really address. Like,
right.
how did these two characters get together? And we never talk about it. And it's only kind of playing around in the background.
You do what that did leave me wondering. I'm like, how did this relationship start? But at the same time, you see crazy relationships all the time, and you wonder, like, how did those two get together and have a kid? And, you know, it's totally believable because it happens all the time. It's just There's multiple layers, especially to that relationship with the mixed race and, you know, Chuck being then a mixed race child, but, it, you know, and a white father and I, you know, without giving too many details of the book. But that adds this depth to the characters that makes the action and the, you know, the overall story, I think, it has a lot more weight to it.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind it. It's not something that I feel like is a point of contention in terms of the development of any of the characters. I agree that with context, it gives a little bit more weight to Chuck, his personality and maybe what he went through as a kid that we don't necessarily see, but then like who he is in his sense of self as an adult. But I tend to appreciate when there isn't a push to be heavy handed with like real world context in a story like this.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to have a whole sidebar conversation explicitly about his struggle being biracial. I think that says a lot about your subtlety as writers, that you didn't need to go into that.
That has never been said about us before.
That's why I had to put it in.
Ever. I will say,
like, it was important to say.
One of the things
I think for Chris, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, you talked about being surprised by it because you were expecting, you know, the fun book about mascot fights. We've had friends, like several of our friends who didn't read the book until it was done, obviously, have told us the same thing. And these are people who have known us for years and have read every comic we've written up to this point. So apparently, this was something different from us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean. Yeah. It keeps the elements of what you would it's going to sound weird, but it keeps the elements of what you would expect for the fun and the entertainment, but there's a maturity. I feel weird using these words, but I think
That's
it makes
okay.
sense. You know, there's a maturity to this story, especially being your first graphic novel. It needs to be a bigger story, you know.
Yeah,
right. It needs to be fuller, and it is. But I want to go. I want to go back to the father son relationship, and I wanted to ask you, Chris. You know, was there a personal aspect to that relate part of the relationship of the story that kind of resonated with you too, especially in writing it?
Not really. Not for me. I mean, like, I think if anything comes of it, it's the idea of parents and their expectations. Mm-hmm. But like, it's more for me about the idea that Chuck is this, you know, and this was the kind of original idea that we worked backwards from to build Downset Fight when we first started having the conversation about it. It was more about Chuck being this physical powerhouse, like this unstoppable physical force.
Right.
And, you know, and that opening chapter, he does something that no one could ever do. Like, he is Superman in that first chapter, right, basically. And the idea that if there's no way to beat him physically, you know, if there's no way to match him physically, then the threat that you get from him has to be mental.
Yeah.
So it has to be a matter of, well, you know, what do you do when you've got if you're a person and you want to manipulate this ultimate physical force, what do? You point it in a direction and set it off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is exactly what Al does.
And who's best to do that but the person closest to him?
Yeah, the person who knows him best and has been, you know, manipulating him for his entire life. That, I mean, you know, my parents were always, like, really supportive of what I wanted to do. you know, my mom especially. Like, my dad died when I was 15. Hmm. So the weird issue I have with my dad is that, you know, he never got to see me as a writer, which I know was something that he wanted to do when he was younger. Mm. So that's, you know, my weird issue, but that has nothing to do with what goes on in Downset Fight. Like, my parents were always really supportive and really helped out with me wanting to be a writer and me wanting to be really into comics and watch Power Rangers when I'm 31.
But, you know, but being a writer though, and fulfilling, you know, it's like, that's a fulfilling destiny sort of thing in a way. Like, I can see it relating to that. Like, you know, I don't want to project onto you, but, you know, fine, I do want to project onto you. Or let me throw out a hypothesis. Like, maybe you being a writer is fulfilling your dad's, you know, his dreams.
See, I mean, I don't think so, because, I mean, it's...
No, I'm telling you.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
I mean, well, that kind of implies that it's not what I want to do, you know? And it definitely is. Like, I love writing, and I've always wanted to be a writer since I was 12.
Mm-hmm. But it's... What's the kind of question, though? Like, is Chuck... Did he want to be a football player?
I don't think he did. And I think that's... you know, we talk about that a little bit in chapter 2, I guess, where Chuck is... We went out of our way to make Chuck not a pathetic character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. When we meet up with Chuck, you know, we leave Chuck at a very low point in his life because he's just been kicked out of, like, a million-dollar contract, mm-hmm. you know? He's been kicked out of this fame and fortune, this American dream idea. And at the end of chapter 1, like, we really went out of our way to make it his choice to leave all that. Like, they're still telling him, like, you know, we can cover this up, we can smooth this over, and you can get back into it.
Right.
And he doesn't. And then in chapter 2, when we pick up, you know, it's funny, we open on him in the bathroom, which mm-hmm. is a very humanizing thing to do.
Right. It's a very reset of, like, here's where we are now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he's got his Heismans on the shelf. You see his trophies on the shelf, but he's not a pathetic figure. We did as much as we could to make him well liked by his coworkers, well liked by his students.
There's so much about the relationship that he has with his students that is important for setting the reintroduction to his character in that second chapter. Like, his kids respect the hell out of him.
Yeah, and that all came from Chad too. That was
so important.
Stuff,
yeah.
Well, I think this is one of the things that Chris and I think not necessarily disagree on, but I think our sort of vision of what Chuck kind of is not different so much as I think I kind of lean closer to the side of Chuck that I like to think of Chuck as a guy that did like football. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. he because he goes right back to it in a way, like when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and he's the football coach too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because I do think he realizes there is some merit to, I don't know if he could verbalize it, but I think he thinks there's some merit to the idea of camaraderie and doing these things. And I don't want to make it sound like he's like a fitness nut, but I mean, there's good, cause obviously he's not by the end of the where he's at in number two, but you know, I do think Chuck likes football. I just think he feels like he never had a chance to like it in his own way. Mm-hmm. And so now as an adult, you know, it's kind of all he knows. So he's kind of learning it in his mm-hmm. own way. Not to blow the ending, but I mean, I think you guys have read the ending. You kind of know what happens at the end. It's a matter of what he is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's ingrained in him, and I don't think his identity can be separate from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, I think he likes the game, but
right,
I don't,
right.
You know, I don't think he liked being on, you know, I don't think he liked being in the position that he was. Like, the thing that he does is he becomes a father figure. You know, not to get like super, you know, super deep in this book that is 90% mascot suplexes, but like Chuck, the reason we made him a teacher was because Chuck is he has his father who mercilessly trains him
mm-hmm.
In these crazy over the top kung fu movie scenes. And then we get Chuck, who's, you know, really naturally talented at football and also really honed his talents, trying to pass that down in a way that's completely different than his dad did.
Yeah. There's some really lovely cuts in the second chapter or the third, where we're going back and forth between his training as a kid with his dad and like the way that he approaches when he's complaining as a kid that he's too hot and his dad won't let him take a break. And then we cut to like, give him a water break in just a second. It's very, I hate to keep using the word subtle because you guys laughed when I said it before, but it's very effective because it's not, because the contrast is so clear.
I mean, the reason we're laughing is because that scene has like a ring of fire.
Yeah, oh, no.
Rope and a ring of fire. But yeah, like that's exactly what we wanted to establish, that he's, you know, he has at least learned from that. And those were fun to write too. Those were super fun.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. Like, looking at those scenes, a lot of people talk about those scenes, and those scenes, I think, with the exception of maybe like one, are like 90% Chris. Like I was reading those pages and then all of a sudden Chuck's in the backyard with bear traps. And it's like, okay, well, I guess this is the thing we're doing in this.
Right.
And, you know, we talked about the weird rigorous training and stuff, but it wasn't until Chris actually wrote the backyard scene that it was like, okay, this is great.
But that brings the levity to
that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that scene in particular, and the idea of how that works. Yeah. It could be way too intense, I think. Mm-hmm. Or way too subtle without that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's a nice contrast. Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's pull back and talk about writing, but differently. Cause you're both coming at writing from the perspective of fans and reviewers of the industry as well. And I mean, Chris, you especially have a very strong reputation for your analysis and your commentary online. And I'm curious if that affects your approach as a writer. Like, do you separate the two? And do you expect your readers to?
No. It better be good. That's what it is.
Well,
but I will say it helps, I think.
The fact that you have a background in the more like analytical approach to comics helps writing them?
I really do. And I don't think every, you know, go and make your own is the worst way to dismiss criticism, because they are different skills.
Yes.
You know, if you go see a movie and that movie sucks and somebody tells you, well, you know, well, why don't you make one? It's, well, because I don't own Superman and I don't have $200 billion. So, but with comics, there's a difference between reading them. You know, people experience comics differently. And Chad and I both worked at a comic book store, and we were both front guys at a comic book store for a long time. So we saw
at the same comic book store, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we saw all kinds of people who read comics in all kinds of different ways. Like, some people, you know, are really into just picking them up, reading them, looking at them, and laying them down. And then they forget about them as soon as they're done, and mm-hmm. they go on with their lives, and that's fine. And some people are really into, you know, I don't like Batman because in Robin number 16, he said something mean to Robin.
Right.
And that is an all important scene for me, even though it was a fill-in issue by someone who never worked again.
But you'd gravitate to it because then it's also something that can be debated too.
Right, and that's fine. But you know, if you're going to review comics and you're going to try and put your stuff out there, or even if you're just going to have conversations about comics, like Chad and I argue all the time, and you know, it's a friendly argument, but there's a lot of okay, why do you think that? Okay, I you know, why are we disagreeing?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, when you're doing that, it's easy to say something sucks, and it's harder to say why. And it's easy to say something's great, and it's really hard to say why it's great.
Right.
So if you go in there and you have to look at it and you have to sit down and figure out, okay, what's good about this? What's bad about this? Why doesn't this work when this similar thing does? I think you do learn a lot. I think you learn about stuff that you want to put in. And you ask yourself questions that are the same questions you ask of other people.
So do you think that you have a greater like fear of failure then? You know, if you can analyze somebody else's work, why aren't you creating the best possible comic ever?
Oh, I have no fear of failure because my stuff's great. Because have you
inflated
read our comics?
Inflated sense of ego, Chad, fear of failure, same difference. It's fine.
No, it's, I mean, there's pressure because obviously if I'm telling the people who are writing the highest selling comic in the world that they're doing a bad job, then I better be able to back that up, you know?
Right.
Like if I'm going to, and that's just, if I'm going to make comics, like, you know, Roger
but you
Ebert
are.
Made,
that's why we're but, talking to you.
Yeah. And I think they are. I think we do the best job we can.
Okay.
And, you know, I think Downset Fight is better than any comic I've written in a review of.
No, that's actually, it's really good to hear you frame it that way. I mean, seriously, I'm giving you a little bit of shit, but you just said it's better than anything else you ever wrote, and you're not comparing it to other people's writing.
No, so, I said it's better than anything I wrote a negative review of.
Oh,
I just started
damn it.
Laughing.
I was giving you a real compliment, and then you just took it away from me.
I mean, I think working with someone helps.
Okay, sure.
Charlie, who's our editor, gave us one of the, I think, the best compliments that we've ever gotten as writers. And he said that our script was tighter than any script he'd worked with by the time he got it. And the reason for that is that Chad and I, we're very similar. We have very similar tastes. We come at things from almost completely different directions sometimes. So we edit each other more than anyone else on the stuff that we write. And I think that's why, you know, Dracula, which I write alone, and Monster Plus, which Chad writes alone, I think that's why they're so different, even though they're, you know, at their heart, they're both monster adventure comics.
Yeah.
They're completely different. And I think that's because we're not around to influence each other on those. We write those very privately.
Well, so that was sort of leads into our next question. You know, it is about that relationship that you guys have as writing partners. It's, you know, it's been a while since we've had married couples, like, you know, like Colleen Coover and Paul Tobin we had on. You know, they work together, but they also work separately. And that's a different relationship than writing partners, I'm assuming.
It's closer than you might think.
Well, that's kind of our question. Like for you guys, you know, Subatomic Party Girls is a very different book than Downset Fight, but you still wrote it together. And how do you approach, is the writing process the same between those two books, or have you learned different things when you're approaching a different story? Like, I'm curious how you edit each other, you know, to go into that.
I don't think our process is very different when it comes to, like, say, writing Downset Fight and Subatomic Party Girls. I know that Chris and I I think it's just experience more than anything, but we do write Subatomic Party Girls a lot faster and a lot cleaner, I think, than we did Downset Fight and even Awesome Hospital. Because I think that it's just that we're kind of in our, you know, I hope I'm not jinxing it, but I think we're kind of in a groove now of how we can kind of work off each other and play off each other. And I think writing an issue of a comic like Subatomic Party Girls and even the chapters of Downset Fight is a lot different than what we were doing when we were working on Awesome Hospital together, because, you know, Awesome Hospital, I would write a page, Chris would write a page, you know, we'd back and forth, and it's very similar to like a writing exercise where you're trying to finish the other guy's sentence and pick up the story from there, whereas with Subatomic Party Girls, you know, I will plot most of the time the entire issue in like a, like for instance with three or four, you know, I will sit down and work up like a couple of paragraphs of what the plot's going to be just so Erica can kind of be thinking about where she's going to go with the issue. Mm-hmm. And then Chris will kind of work off that a little bit and tweak that and play with that. And then we'll break into the script side of things. And that's a lot more smooth than it used to be. And I think that just comes with experience because, you know, I mean, Lord knows it would have made a lot more sense for us to work off plots earlier than 5 years into the relationship. But I think it's a process now, whereas before we were just kind of like trying to figure it out every time we sat down and trying to work on something together. But I think we've got a process now.
I think we work together really well, and we work like, I think it was a very immediate thing when we started working together. Like, Hard Ones took a little bit to came over, and it took a lot of like fights and hammering. Mm-hmm. Which was the first thing we wrote, which was kind of our Action Age tryout book for a while. That's, you know, that's the thing we sent Oni to show, like, hey, look, we can actually write comics.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then, you know, Awesome Hospital was such a weird thing to write together, because we all ended up caring about it way more than we
ever thought expected to. Yeah, exactly.
But caring about like what you could inject into the story, or just caring about the story overall?
Just in general, both actually, because Awesome Hospital was at the very beginning sort of a throwaway book. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
this is something we're going to do to kind of play around with. We want to work with Matt Diggs. Let's do this thing that's crazy. You know, we thought up Awesome Hospital in most of the first issue over lunch at Taco Bell one day.
It was 45
and, minutes. Mm-hmm. Like 25 minutes, yeah. And we just kind of tossed it all together and pitched it to Matt, and Matt liked it, and Matt started doing some work. And we were going to do it for Zuda. I don't know if you guys remember Zuda. But, you know, that was the big plan, is we were going to pitch it, and if Zuda liked it, fine. If Zuda didn't like it, well, nothing lost, nothing gained. But just in, like, those first 8 pages, we figured out kind of a lot of different things to do and started really, really liking the characters. And from there, how many pages of Awesome Hospital do we have? It's, like, over 100, right?
Yeah, it's over 100 pages.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not long by webcomic standards at all.
Right, right. But I mean, you know, it got a nice little following pretty quickly. And, you know, from there, it was a lot more. I think it was the first time I had written anything. And I think Chris feels this more than I do, certainly because of where he is on, like, in the grand scheme of things of like comics journalism and criticism. But, you know, Chris sort of has an audience. Like, what's funny is that Chris was, at one point in time, sort of my audience. It was like him and like 4 dudes at the comic book store. And then we started working together. And, you know, there's a lot that sort of comes out of, I think, those years for both of us working at the store together. But my feel of having an audience for the first time, or somebody who really wanted to know what you're going to do with these characters and the comment sections and those things, I really fed off that those first couple of years on Awesome Hospital, because it felt like you had an immediate, you know, feedback or immediate return on what you were doing. And I think that sort of led into my passion for those characters and stuff. I don't know.
It ended up getting weirdly personal in the weirdest possible way.
Especially that last story.
Yeah. The last story is great.
Yeah.
But did you learn something about writing and separating yourself from the characters with that too? Because it seems like it's an easy trap to fall into, especially if you're writing partners, to care so much about a character and where you think they should go that you can't separate yourself as the writer from the story.
I mean, I think you have to do that though. I mean, I think you have to put yourself in those characters.
Hmm. I think I had to learn
where the good stuff comes from.
I think I had to learn to separate myself a little bit, though, because my very first comic was done with a guy named Chris Nye, and it's called Dr. Impossible, or it's called just Impossible now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still up on the Action Age website. And it was very, very, like, at the time, it was a very, you know, intensely personal story to me. And looking back on it now, like, I can't see anything but how personal it was to me. You know what I mean? And I really need to, and I, that taught
how
me to sort
of.
Golly, when did I write that? I got, like in 2004, maybe 2003. Yeah,
that's got to be like 10 years ago.
Yeah, and looking back on it, I still think it's an okay story. Don't get me wrong. And I still like a lot of what I wanted to do with it. But that first issue was nothing but just like opening a vein on the page in a lot of the ways for me. You know, and it's like, yeah, you know, that's a little bit, that's not who I am as a writer. You know what I mean? That's not who I feel like I will ever be as a writer. And that certainly helped out a lot.
Also a father and son story.
That's what I was going to say earlier. Yeah, it's got a lot. It's got a lot.
Before you were a father.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Yeah. But it sort of helped me, you know, temper things a little bit, I think. And Awesome Hospital sort of helped me invest a little more. So I think the balance between the two has sort of made me kind of where I am today, at least, or who I am today as a writer.
The joke of Awesome Hospital was always that it was a medical drama that was insane.
Right.
Like it was a medical drama where people were on dirt bikes and there were robots and guitar solos. So the trick of Awesome Hospital, and I think the thing that helped us really write Downset Fight, was that we had to put an equal amount of effort into the weird stuff.
Right.
Like making the doctors funny by making them so weird and over the top, and making the diseases so weird and over the top.
Yeah. And then there's nothing weird about it in story. And I think that's part of the gimmick.
Yeah.
And then we also had to make this drama that would contrast with that stuff by being soap operatic and at least, you know, mildly compelling.
Right.
So like, you know, Dirt Bike and Dr. Robot ended up, you know, Mike and Judith ended up being like really like you wanted to see them work it out at the end, I think.
Isn't that part of our drive as humans too? We love the drama, but we want the satisfaction of a happy ending too. And we want the absurdity to temper the high emotion.
Yeah, like which is exactly what we were trying to do there. And I think that I was thinking that there's a really natural progression from The Hard Ones to Awesome Hospital to Downset Fight to Subatomic Party Girls, like in that regard, where we keep trying to do this super weird stuff that's contrasted against these personal conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the best example of that so far is Downset Fight, which that's all it is.
Right.
It's this intensely personal conflict between a man and his father that manifests as a bear fight.
Right.
Yeah.
And Party Girls, I think, is going to get there soon, but I think Party Girls by design is skewed a little more towards the wacky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it certainly hits some of that stuff in what we've been talking about recently. That's going to happen probably in number five, but I think number four or number three is sort of which is out actually February 12th. I think people will see a little bit of that kind of creeping in with Subatomic Party Girls 3.
So I'm pretty intrigued by this dual role that you guys play in the industry as a whole, like kind of one foot in both on both sides. So assuming that you potentially have a little bit more analytical insight here, what do you think needs to change in comics over the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years to ensure that it's a thriving industry that like all of our kids are going to continue to be into?
Well, Superman and Batman need to put their real clothes back on. Need to wear their real costumes instead of this high collars and chin straps and knee pads they got going on now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right. Yeah,
it's my big.
What else?
That's mainly what I'm.
You know, that's actually a good point though, because like, I think people need to just have more fun with comics. Like, not be afraid to let comics do a lot of different things. You know, like we've been talking about it with Downset Fight. Like, there's really no reason that you can't have a story where a guy fights a mascot and has like an emotional, you know, breakdown in front of his dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's all kinds of things you can do in comics. You're only limited by your imagination in comics. Okay. And what we see so much now, I think, I don't want to turn this into like a bash session for a comics company that I don't like, but you see so many people trying to reinvent the wheel when comics are kind of already perfect, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like with DC and I don't know. It's kind of a hot button topic.
Yeah. We don't have to get into specifics. But I think there's too much of looking at what a market will, you know, what they think the market will bear versus what is entertaining to readers.
Well, I think people compartmentalize stuff too much. Like if you look back at the 80s, you know, the golden age.
Sure.
And look, that's a joke, but the 80s were a golden age for comics. And the reason was that, like, you look at the real books that we look back on and and celebrate today, you know, going back 30 years. If you look at X-Men, you look at New Teen Titans, you look at Justice League, the Given to Mattias Justice League, and you look at Suicide Squad, and you look at Thor, and you look at, all that stuff. They all had different elements, and it really, really bugs me when people look back at, like, the Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis Justice League, and like they're like, oh, yeah, that's the joke Justice League. And it's like, no, that's just the Justice League. It just happened to have some jokes in it, and then there was an issue where Despero showed up and killed Mr. Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't funny. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that Chad and I were talking about just the other day is that if you go back and read G.I. Joe, like the Larry Hama G.I. Joe, it's hilarious. There's so many jokes in that book. And a lot of people want to look back on it as like, I mean, yeah, this was, you know, the military book. This was the serious military action book that,
right.
You know, they took these dumb toys and made them, you know, that dumb cartoon and made them a serious military thing.
Yeah.
Or you look at, you know, Suicide Squad, and everybody wants to look at Suicide Squad and say, like, yeah, you know, this is the grim and gritty book where they took the silly villains and made them, you know, legitimate threats and gave us, you know, Deadshot and killed off a lot of the villains that sucked. And it did that, but again, it was also a character-driven book that was frequently very funny.
Hmm.
And I think people want to lock comics down into being dour in a lot of ways. Like, they want it to be really, really serious, and so they want to get away from the, you know, even the faintest whiff of silliness.
Are we, do you think we're, like, in a generational kind of, like, limbo at the moment? Because it seems like a lot of that, what you're talking about, is also driven by the 35 to 45-year-olds, kind of like myself, who the 80s is the golden age. And when you talk about, like, G.I. Joe, like, G.I. Joe was a book I read a ton of, too. And I do think, it's interesting to say that there is a ton of humor in that, but I think over time, maybe what's left is the impact of the drama.
Yeah, and that's great. Like, I want those books to have drama, but I want them to not be... Okay, something I was thinking about earlier today. Dexter, right? Everybody loves Dexter. He's the cat Red Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see it and they go, ha, the cat, you know, the Red Lanterns are this super serious thing where they're so serious that they're vomiting blood all the time, and that's their entire deal.
Right.
But they got this little cat with them that's funny, and people gravitate to that. So as soon as people start gravitating to that, you get the story of Dexter's origin, where Dexter witnessed a woman getting beaten to death and possibly raped. There's, you know, a kind of rape implication in that story. For this cat people like.
Yeah.
There's no reason for that to be in there. And I mean, you know,
That character should be the 21st century equivalent of, like, you know, Nort. Right?
Yeah.
Like
it's funny if there's a cat from space that's so mad that it's vomiting blood all the time.
Right.
It's not funny when there's a person being beaten to death and possibly raped.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like they seem to only want it one way. You know what I mean? Like, and that, I think that's what sort of dominates it these days. Like you can't start with a good idea. Like I don't even know if Dexter is a good idea, but let's for the sake of argument, let's talk about Dexter for a second. But yeah, you know, it's better to not have an origin for Dexter than to have that origin for Dexter. You know what I mean?
And just so it's not getting into our reputation as guys who bash DC Comics.
Right. I'm not gonna sit here and do that.
There was a story, you know, years ago. There's an Avengers story that Brian Bendis wrote, and Chad, you might remember it. It's the one where the Wrecker comes back.
Yes.
And there's like this weird scene where the Wrecker is like, yeah, I've been in jail a long time. There's like a 15-year-old girl there. It's like, you know, like a teenage Paris Hilton type girl.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, yeah, like, no, the Wrecker is a guy with a magic crowbar who breaks.
Yeah, like, there's that. Like, and there's stuff like that all over. Like, there's stuff like that all over the place today.
Well, is it not trusting the imagination of the reader? Like, it's the feeling the need to complete every aspect of the story as opposed to leaving some stuff open to our imagination. Like, it to me, it seems like it would be better to for the reader to always wonder what made Dexter a Red Lantern. We don't ever need to know. Come up with your own reason for it.
Yeah, people don't like him because of his origin, right? Like, people don't like Dexter. Yeah, it's the same way. You know, they like him because he's an interesting, well, you know, for a number of reasons. He's an interesting visual, you know? He's an unconventional, you know, version of all these other guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of little things you bring to him what you like about him.
Well, just like a Rocket Raccoon or something like that. It's like, I don't need to know every horrible thing that happened to Rocket Raccoon to make him, you know, a mercenary badass. It's like, he's funny.
Yeah.
one of the things we really try to do in Downset Fight, and this goes back to the training flashbacks. Like, the reason Chuck runs through bear traps and, you know, has to fight a whole bar full of bikers by himself and has to smash down an oak tree with his shoulder block is because we wanted them to be so over the top and cartoonish that you would get the idea. Like, you get the idea, like, oh, Al is crazy and is, you know, training his child to be this destruction machine without it coming off as horrible abuse. Like, it's Looney Tunes in a way that gets the idea across and kind of gives you the idea that, you know, yeah, Chuck had a pretty miserable childhood.
Right.
But it's not beating him with a sock full of oranges.
You should laugh at the first one, right? Like, yeah. you should laugh the first time you see it. But the second and third time, and really by the end of it with the motorcycles, you should be like, oh my God, you know?
It was really important for us to start with the one with the bear traps, too, because that's the most cartoon.
Looney Tunes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's important to have those emotions, but I think you need to do it in a way that doesn't undercut things, you know? And it's really easy to undercut the genre that you're in. Like, if our story of mascot fights also is a story of child abuse, it's not fun anymore. Right. Like, there's no way to bring that back to being a lighthearted adventure.
Yeah.
So,
and it's all about sort of how you tell the audience to feel. And I'm not trying to say that the audience has to feel the way you ask them to, but there's a way to get the point across without having, you know, dark shadows of, you know, Al's, you know, silhouette smacking Chuck, you know, those kind of things. Right. It's like, there's a lot of that in there. And yeah, you know, I just feel like there's different ways to do things more creatively. So it made me happy earlier when you guys were talking about how you perceive the book, because those are exactly the ways I feel like, you know, people should be striving to make other books feel like I'm trying to think of a bad comic that I've read recently that I've, you know, and another part of what we do is reverse engineer comics. You know what I mean? Because so many comics are just, they're so close to being exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Actually,
on that note, I was going to ask you about the comics that you remember reading as a kid, but knowing that you both have just this phenomenal knowledge of comics, that seems almost like too easy. Instead, I'm gonna put you on the spot. You've got only one comic that's current that you can recommend. What is it?
You ready, Chris?
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah, I got one.
Let's count to three and see if we say the same one.
Okay. Wait.
Adorable.
We gotta count to three to see if we can name one comic.
No, one that you're
like
recommending.
One today, like a modern comic, like a book that's out today, a book
right
that you
now
would recommend.
What do people need to be reading right now? Just one.
Okay, it's not gonna be the same thing, I don't think, because I don't think Chad's read mine.
Oh.
Okay.
Let's try it anyway. Let's try it anyway.
No. Okay. Now I thought we were both gonna say the same thing after.
No. Now I'm gonna make you do this. Ready?
All right. Ready?
Okay.
One, two, three.
Copra.
Daredevil.
Both good.
Yeah, those are both two really good comics.
Yeah.
Yes. Copra is a little unfair until he prints some more up, though.
Yeah, you can still find it.
He just posted a whole list on Michel Fief's FIFA. Fief. Where do you put the pronunciation? I don't have it.
I think it's Fif.
Fif? Oh, okay.
I've actually asked him about it. I made a point to ask him about it and then promptly forgot.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, his website has a list of a lot of the shops around the country that carried it, and many, including Mission Comics here in San Francisco, still have some in stock.
Yeah.
So
that guy, you want to talk about reverse engineering? That guy's the patron saint.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Engineering.
Yes.
Yeah.
Specifically Suicide Squad, that there's never been such a love for a comic that's been reproduced in a comic that I've ever seen. So
Anyway,
look on the website. And I agree with Daredevil as well, too.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Daredevil's amazing.
Yes.
It's a great example of how you can take a book that I think a lot of people had felt like was played out, or certainly only kind of could do one thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, post Miller, post, you know, Brubaker, post Bendis.
It was depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it fun.
Right, exactly. They tried to do the same thing over and over again, and they only felt like they could tell kind of one story.
Yeah.
And yet, Wade's sort of done the opposite of that, but still kind of kept that same kind of gravitas to the storytelling. And it's just been incredible. And it's been like really, really like creative artistically too, with the tricks that they play. I mean, it's really just a better superhero comic than I think any of us sort of expected from that book. And yeah.
And I mean, you know, I mean, let's go ahead and just say that Mark Waid is the best superhero comic book writer of all time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I think he's certainly definitely at the top. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Dan Juergens is probably the top.
Well, that's right. It's Dan Juergens, and then we'll count Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummet as one team.
Right, right. And then Mark Waid.
Then Mark Waid.
I think that's still pretty good.
Thank you very much for talking with us today. I guess really quickly, if there's any last bit of advice that you want to leave our listeners, or let's just call it your chance to change lives, save lives, change the course of history, no pressure, ready, go.
Everybody read Down Set Fight.
We've
made it sound like it's the best comic ever made by two guys who know exactly what comics should be.
Good.
So you will undoubtedly be your expectations are right where they should be for that book.
What about you, Chad?
No, I want to say thank you to you guys for talking about it in a way that at this point I don't think we've had a chance to kind of discuss it. So that was kind of fun.
Good. Well, I'm glad. Like, that's what we aim for. We try to. There's so many aspects of books and creators' lives and that sort of thing that we don't feel get touched on. So we try to get into it a little more and usually find it pretty refreshing too. Thanks for talking with us today. Well, I think this is going to wrap it up. Thanks again, guys, for joining with us on the couch this week. And thanks to all of you listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local shop and subscribe to them digitally. Show notes and other details are on the site, as always, on comicstherapy.com. Until next week.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes. No one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free.